You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode. We are excited to bring you our last episode of April.
Yeah.
So we're going to be wrapping up our travel episodes, or our travel month, rather, with a little trip to the desert. So we're going to bring some herbs that are good kind of in dry areas. Mm-hmm. They may not just be desert specific, but still you can find them there. And then we're also going to bring you some things that you could do in the desert, ways that you could incorporate movement, and then also some tips for working out in the heat, whether that is in the desert or elsewhere.
Sounds great. So how are you doing today?
I'm hungry because I can't eat because I'm going in for a kidney stone removal procedure today. So they get to blast it to dust, and then hopefully they blast it into small enough particles that when I do have to pass it, that part doesn't become painful in itself. This has become a whole thing.
Well, I know you've never experienced childbirth, but if you do have to pass a bigger one, you probably will feel something similar.
Well, that first night it hit me, I think that's as pretty close as I'll ever come, because I was pretty freaking excruciating, and I hope not every woman's childbirth experience is like that. How are you doing today, Paula?
Good. On the topic of women's health and things, I took a really fantastic cycle syncing course. It was about an hour and a half just talking with Dr. Nicole Finkelstein. She was on our show in March. I think it was episode 18. Her handle on Instagram is Urban Austin, and it was a fantastic, I highly, highly recommend it if you're looking to get in tune. I love the way that she said it wasn't just for women, it was people who bleed, because we are getting away from this gender kind of title, I guess you would. And people are, so anybody who bleeds, who experiences a menstrual cycle, there's a fantastic way to really go through the four phases of that, incorporate different herbs and food. And she talks all about it. And, it was really great to really highlight the fact that we're really on the male hormone cycle in terms of our daily routine. It's a 24-hour cycle. Usually she mentions that, and how, a lot of the time I feel really out of sync with what I should be doing, how I should be productive in the morning, or how I should be doing something in the afternoon. Yeah. And it was really nice and enlightening to kind of see that, a female's hormone cycle is, that whole month of just continuing to shift. And so really enlightening. I highly suggest it for those that are interested.
Yeah, sweet. That sounds great. And that is literally something I never have even thought of. Yeah. That just the way we feel we are supposed to move throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Can be reflective of like something so much deeper.
Right.
I mean, we just take it for granted. We're supposed to wake up in the morning and do our thing and stay productive throughout the entire day. At least that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. And, it makes sense maybe if that doesn't feel in tune with who you are. And we were talking about this a little bit before the episode started, just, sometimes you go into that shame spiral of that feeling that you didn't get enough done, or you weren't as productive as you should, or you should have gotten that done in the way beginning of the morning instead of later in the afternoon. And maybe if we are more in touch with our hormones and as women or people who have hormones reflective of women, females,
right.
Trying my best. Then maybe they will kind of be easier on themselves, or just understand how they could be more efficient and be as productive as they want to be without feeling that burnout or, that like spiral.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what we try to achieve here all the time, which is this more holistic approach of incorporating movement and plants and just supporting your body, supporting your lifestyle in the way that works best for you. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily adhering to a rigorous schedule or diet or whatever it is, just because it's the new latest fad. You really have to be in tune with your body and what your body needs.
Yeah. And even just like, even just knowing that you don't have to do it all at the same time. I mean, this was another thing Paula and I were talking about, is she was talking about this cycle syncing seminar that she had done and different herbs that you could take in different times of your cycle. And I'm in a point in my life right now where I'm really trying to find balance, and I'm not, I hate to say that this, no, this doesn't make me weak. This just is what it is. I've been feeling overwhelmed lately. So even just the thought of bringing in, you know, having that mindfulness seemed like an overwhelming task to me. But yesterday, Jeff and I did a little tea tasting of three teas that Paula has recently cultivated, because we're doing a boot camp and tea event in the next week, this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was smelling the teas and I was starting to be able to identify certain smells, and I've never really felt developed in that way, like with my senses and that connected. So that started to get exciting. And then we opened up our tea diffusers and we were looking at the leaves, and I was able to identify some of that. And it showed me that even though I'm not maybe incorporating as many herbs as I want to, and you know, I'm not doing all the things that I eventually want to lead into,
right,
you know, that little bit that I am ingesting, or not ingesting, you know, mind and body, is making a difference. And, you know, having these conversations is leading to an education, even without me feeling overwhelmed or feeling like I need to know it all at once.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And that's something that I don't think I've necessarily said outright. You can't be an armchair herbalist, which is obsessed with just reading the text and going through the books and having this collection. I like that. You really, it's almost the opposite, which is interesting, because every single topic or field of study that we go into, we go to school for such a long time and we get invested in the book aspect of it before we dive in and get our hands into it. And really with herbalism and just experiencing herbs, it starts with that tea. You know, I say that all the time. The best way to incorporate is like teas and spices. You want to smell it. You want to feel it. That's how you're going to remember it. And you're going to remember it a lot easier once you start getting into the books and kind of all of the in-depth knowledge of it, because it'll still bring you back to that more visceral experience that you had while you were drinking that, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a great way to experience it. I'm really excited. We're actually going to have 12 different herbs that we're going to cover in the boot camp and tea event. So really informative for people, which I think is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Really looking forward to it. And with that, I think we could get into the meat. Oh no, not the meat. Paul's going vegan right now. Get into the core of our work today. So the desert.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
These are drought resistant herbs that I'm going to be talking about. You know, one in particular actually grows in a lot of places, and I think I briefly mentioned it. It grows actually on Danielle's property quite often, which is mullein. And that's a fantastic herb. There's over 300 different varieties of it. You can have the ornamental, which is most varieties are ornamental, or the ones that you actually use medicinally. The taste of it is like a sweet kind of pungent or bitter taste. And so it has a cooling yet kind of a little bit drying effect to it. So anytime you have an herb that's a little bit maybe pungent or bitter, or, you know, you're going to see a little bit of that drying. But it's really great when you're using mullein and incorporating mullein. A few episodes ago, we talked about different doshas in Ayurvedic medicine. And it said that mullein is really good for removing the kapha, that like heavy, almost damp state or stagnant state that might be in your body in certain places. So it's really great. In terms of the look of it, it's got this really cool kind of fuzzy leaf floret at the base.
I heard that the leaves are excellent toilet paper.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I guess you could definitely do that.
Don't
very soft and
don't quote me. Right. I heard. I'm not sure. I haven't tested out the theory myself, but it looks really soft.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's better than probably using a few other things.
Yeah.
And so it actually, it really identifies well in the in fields and when you're hiking and things like that, because it's got such a long, big floral stalk or spike. It can be 5, 6, sometimes 10 feet tall.
Oh my God. Yeah. The ones on our property have gotten huge, and then they've had multiple like heads as well. So they almost ended up looking, some of the really big ones ended up looking like a version of cacti almost at the top.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening, that can happen sometimes if you don't deadhead them and they just kind of regrow onto the old stalks the year after. So yeah, the fuzzy leaves at the base, it usually takes maybe 1 to 2 years before you really see a big stalk with the flowers. Mm-hmm. And so if you do see a big stalk with flowers, then you know that it's been there for a while. The other really interesting thing with mullein is that, you can identify whether or not you've got contaminated soil with like a lot of chemicals and things like that, because they'll grow crooked or kind of twisted.
Oh.
And so when you're going to harvest, you don't want to harvest those that aren't strong, straight up stalks, just for that reason. So something to think about.
Sweet. I got strong, straight stalks.
Right.
So that's a good sign.
Yeah. So it's a really great herb. You know, it's got a interesting life cycle to it, but you can really use any part of the plant, the flowers, the leaves, the actual root, which is more like a taproot. So you can pull that out, dry it and use that. Yeah.
Yeah. I raised my hand. I was like, oh, I know something about mullein. Well, mentioning the taproot, I actually heard that, you know, some people may look at mullein as a weed, but we live in an area that is also really clay and kind of rocky, mm-hmm. in our soil. And I know this woman who's a botanist, and she's has an incredible amount of knowledge, and she says that she likes to leave the mullein in because the taproot is so deep and kind of such a strong big taproot that it breaks up the soil a little bit in that area, so it kind of like makes it a little bit softer. So I never really thought about it from that aspect, because I always heard that it's also good for like lung issues, right? Like you could dry it and then smoke it, which seems kind of funny to me.
Yeah, the respiratory, it has a lot of really good respiratory benefits to it. So the different aspects of the plant, like you can drink the leaves, the fuzzy leaves, you dry those and you can drink those as a tea. You can use the flowers, create like an essential oil or even an oil with some with some olive oil in it, and use it in your ears for like an ear infection, you know, the flowers. So the flowers only bloom, I don't know if you've noticed, for a very, very short amount of time, like a day or two, if that. And so you can harvest the flowers when they're, you know, at their peak. That it's usually you want to get in there early in the morning, pick all those, and then you can use those for like a face wash, which is really nice. So all the aspects of the plant can be used.
So for that face wash, would you dry those and then kind of grind them up, or can you use them raw?
Yeah, you can use them. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, I would say the leaves are best dried. The roots are best dried. Mm-hmm. You can dry the flowers, but you can also use the flowers just as is, which is nice. Yeah.
So a question maybe, because I have this question, so I'm sure other people do as well, but you talk about harvesting the mullein, and at what point do you do that? Because since you can use so many different parts of them, like right now there's this huge, beautiful base of a mullein in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And the leaves are really that nice, soft green color right now. And it looks really strong, but the stalk hasn't grown out of it yet. So at what point do you want to harvest it? And then depending on what you're using, does it make a difference in when you would harvest it?
So the leaves right now at the base, before it starts getting that floral spike, those are really good times to harvest those for teas. Mm. And then the root itself, you don't really want to get until it starts forming that floral stalk. You can pull it right before the flowers come out, but obviously you're pulling out the entire plant. And so, you know, there's issues with that potentially. It takes a year or two sometimes to see that floral stalk, but once it gets there, you can harvest the flowers then, you know, like we mentioned. So it does definitely make a difference, but I would say if you're getting the leaves for tea, which is really good, you want to get those before it forms the stalk.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned that tea, would you be able to also just use the leaves as soon as you harvest them, or do you need to dry those before you?
I would say dry them. Yeah, just because they're fuzzy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes like when I have oolong or something like that, I'll just toss the leaves in water and then drink it. But with those, because especially once you dry them, they're going to have, you know, the fuzziness of the leaf is going to kind of irritate you a little bit. So you want to like put that in maybe a reusable tea bag or some kind of diffuser or something to just make sure that it all kind of stays out of the water.
Gotcha. Yeah. Good tips. I was wondering that, because I was wondering if that fuzziness was irritating. That's why I was telling you all to also do your research about toilet paper.
Right.
Because I was like, I heard it's great and soft, but will that fuzziness lead to an itchy butt?
Yeah. I think, you know, if you're desperate in the woods, it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Just get into the creek or something as soon as you can and actually get yourself washed off. Nobody likes an itchy butt.
No, especially not while you're like hiking and stuff. No. All right. So that's awesome. I'm actually looking forward to maybe harvesting some of my melon now that you gave us that little tidbit of information. So I kind of wanted to talk about a little kind of fun aspect of the desert and of visiting sand dunes. So sand dunes could be so much fun. You could find them in different parts of the world. We have them in Oregon here in North Bend. The Eastern Oregon is the high desert, so you may find some there. There's a really dope spot in Vietnam. I know that I'm not going to pronounce this properly, but Muni, it's M-U-I-N-E. That's the name of the town. And it's also world renowned for kite surfing. So if you actually go to the beach, all you see is kite surfers. Like they're just, you could almost not get into the water because it's just kite surfers. But then they also have these incredible sand dunes. And then also I know that Sedona has sand dunes as well and things that you could do. So different parts that you could explore, maybe mark on that map that you created for yourself. But what I like about sand dunes is you get, it's like combining our last few episodes. You get the sand of the beach, and then you kind of get the elevation changes of a mountain.
Right.
So you could have an incredible, incredible workout on some sand dunes. So, you know, some ideas, even if you're not doing exercise specific movement, I want you to think about how these movements can affect your body. So let's say you're going sandboarding. I mean, similar to surfboarding, you're going to have to be using your hips, your obliques. You're going to be using a lot of your lower body as well to kind of control the board. But it's going to take a lot of core work for you to be able to make those maneuvers and those cuts, even in the sand, even if you're just trying to stabilize. I mean, you could equate this to surfing and to snowboarding. And I don't know if you've done any of those things for a full, even just one full day, but you feel those muscles that you worked. So that's a great fun way for you to incorporate movement into your day. Even just hiking and walking around the sand dunes in itself can be a workout. You have those elevation changes. You have the sand that is providing that unstable surface. So without you even realizing, just walking through the sand dunes, you're activating your stabilizing muscles. You're engaging, especially like around the ankle and stuff, which leads to the knee and the hip. So be mindful. This isn't, you should still be mindful as you should in all movement, but you know, as something as simple as walking in that environment can engage in a different way than you just walking down the street.
Right.
Even four-wheeling in sand dunes. We did it in Vietnam. I basically just screamed the entire time, especially when I was driving because I thought I was just going to flip us. But when you're trying to control that four-wheeler and you're trying to make sure it doesn't flip, and especially maybe if you're a little nervous, like you may have some tension that you're holding. But I personally feel that there's one, again, a lot of core work because so much of our movement does stem from that place, but also a lot of upper body. Right. Like you, I mean, even though like you think of just steering, like you're controlling a machine over an uncontrolled surface. So without you even realizing, like you may, opposed to taking a four-wheeler down something that's compact or something that's hard, you know, you're going to be utilizing, I would even say total body, because you're probably gripping that seat with your legs. So guaranteed you're holding tension in your muscles, in your quads, in your inner thighs, so that you're not, you know, feeling like you're going to get whipped off if you make a quick turn.
Right.
So there's so many fun things that you could do that don't even look like exercise, but you could think about how they could still benefit your body. And you could still stay mindful about the way that your body is moving. And with that being said, also remember to stretch. Like these may not seem like things that you need to stretch after, but all of these parts of your body are being activated and potentially in ways that you don't normally activate them.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, I don't know how often on a day-to-day basis you're going sandboarding. But I am not. So, you know, think about those things. Just because it's, again, just because it's not a gym doesn't mean it's not working you. And then just some like actual exercises you can do. And I'm just going to give a few examples. But think about a bear crawl. A bear crawl is when you're on all fours, your knees are just underneath your hips and they're hovering just slightly over the ground.
It looks really easy as a move, and then you try to do it and it's ridiculous.
It engages so much of your core. It is so activating. Your wrists are under your shoulders, and then it just holding that can be challenging. And then if you try to throw in movement to make it more dynamic, you're going opposite hand, opposite foot. And for anyone who wants to try this, I notice this all the time. People try to take too big of a step. Mm-hmm. These should be small movements. You're trying to keep your hips low. You're not going ass in the air. Save that for your bedroom or the club, but not the sand dunes. The club. So when you're in this position, imagine one, if you were just on sand, that's going to fully activate. That's going to be hard as hell. But then imagine you're trying to go up a small sand dune or down a small sand dune in that position. When you're going up, you're going to be engaging more of that lower body as you're trying to push through the sand as well as your core. When you're going down, you're going to be relying more on your upper body and your core to prevent you from like falling forward. So you're going to be tackling different parts of your body depending on the incline or decline and position of your movement, which I think is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then imagine just freaking jumping. Take broad jumps up and down one of these sand dunes. Do some freaking cartwheels. Mm-hmm. Jeff and I were in New Mexico. Another place that you could go, the White Sands in New Mexico, which is a great spot. Yep, it's freaking stunning. Jeff and I were doing cartwheels, and it was freaking exhausting. Jeff is way better at them than I am, by the way. Maybe I could find a video to show you guys. But it's about making your movement fun. I'll say it 1,000 times because it always comes back to that. Find the things that bring you joy. Find the way that movement brings you joy and grow from that place. So even if it's as simple and as fun and as childlike as doing some cartwheels on some sand dunes, do those damn cartwheels, laugh, fall, and have a great time.
Well, speaking of sand, and this is a really great kind of segue because sal palmetto is really native to areas like Florida and things where it's sandy.
Represent.
But you've got, it's kind of like the coastal sandy aspect of it. They're definitely drought resistant. They don't necessarily need to be in marshes or anything, but sal palmetto is one I wanted to bring up because it's so highly marketed as a male herb. And that's something I wanted to talk about because herbs are not male herbs or female herbs. I may say on the podcast that things are great for female, you know, health. It doesn't exclusively mean it's a female herb. You know, it's great for whole health. And so I just wanted to make sure that we mention that because this is one that's been marketed as for prostate health, you know, for men to take that, and women a lot of the time say, well, I don't have a prostate. Why would I even bother learning about this? But it's actually a really great herb for overall organ function in your reproductive organs for men and women. So it is moistening and warming, which is really great. Just make sure if you are looking to start something with sal palmetto, you're looking at purchasing sustainably harvested or sourced. I know quite a while ago in the 80s and 90s, it was just vastly harvested. And so for a while there, you had to have permits because it was just being over harvested. So the little dark berries are what we were talking about. You can still kind of get palmetto berries or supplements, whatever it is. Just make sure it's sustainable when you're getting that. So it's really great for overall immune health as well, which a lot of people don't realize. Now, you don't want to just go take it because you are worried about having a cold. You really have to focus on what exactly you're wanting it for, and it's really best for just reproductive organ health. It's a really great herb that has over 100 different compounds in it. So a lot of different areas, there's like fatty acids and all this really great stuff inside of it. And I brought it up specifically because it also addresses some of the symptoms of PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. We'll have a guest on in May, the second week in May, so here in just a week or so, that will be talking about that. We're going to be talking about being a vegan, going a little vegetarian, how that helps with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which quite a few women have around the world. You know, it's really interesting, and there's really not as much research as there should be. We've talked about, you know, hair loss as women, hair growth in places you don't want it, you know, like body hair as women and how all of those things. So when you're looking at saw palmetto, you can also, you know, if you're researching and doing some of those other things, you might hear it as an anti-estrogen or like anti-androgen type of supplement. Really what it's saying is it's a hormone balancing supplement. So it can help with some of those symptoms of hair loss or like body hair for women, which is really nice. It's fat soluble, and it also changes the way that fat is stored in the body when taken long-term. You know, there's not as many studies as there should be, especially for women, because the medical industry is so male-dominated in terms of kind of research and body and how those interact, and then obviously animal studies. So there's definitely more research that needs to happen, but there's something called the 5-alpha reductase converts testosterone into DHT, which is dihydrotestosterone. And this is the androgen that is a little more harmful. It's the one, when we're talking about testosterone, there's different variances of that. This is the one that's going to give you the deeper voice that men usually have, the body hair that men usually have, some of those things. And so when you have maybe androgens, which happens with PCOS, when you have a higher level of those, it's something obviously you want to try to balance out. Saw palmetto is also a really great anti-inflammatory. When we talk about hair loss, it's really great because it strengthens the hair follicles, and that's really important. We talked about boosting immune system and just autoimmune modulating. So it's really just allowing your whole body to work a little bit better.
I mean, I know that we need more research as we do most things, but it sounds like an incredible thing. And I love how it kind of connects to who we're going to be talking to in a couple of weeks, because I know that PCOS is something that is hard for diagnosis, hard to get diagnosed, I guess. And a lot of women get misdiagnosed or not really listened to, I guess. And I know that's a huge issue. So if, you know, there is something that could support people who are dealing with that, I think it's such a powerful medicine.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at the symptoms that you're having and then supporting the symptoms of your body, not necessarily just being like, oh, I have PCOS, I need to find things that are good for PCOS. You know, sometimes it's just supporting those symptoms, which saw palmetto does really well. It also, for women who have had children, who sometimes worry about, you know, sneezing and then peeing themselves a little bit, or some of those really fun, sexy things us women have to deal with.
Or you train with me and then you end up peeing a little bit, apparently, from what I've heard from some of my mother clients. Quite a few, almost all.
Yeah, you know, the best thing about saw palmetto is, and the reason that it's used for prostate health, is it helps empty your bladder fully. So you're not kind of getting that stagnation in your bladder, the reproductive organ, so it's still moving. The one thing you do have to worry about is if you're pregnant, nursing, this is not the herb for you. Do not give this herb to children. This is not an herb that should be given to anybody who is going through puberty still, maybe going through transition. Some of those things, you just want to give your body time to get to the next stage and then maybe incorporate some of these herbs. So,
and you know, I know that you said in the beginning that you want it, well, with this, especially with this saw palmetto, that it could be, you know, people may associate it with prostate. So why do I need to do the research? Because that's only for men. We did mention kind of something in the beginning when we first started this podcast though, of even if, and I just wanted to reiterate this, like even if it was something specific in that regard, we do want to emphasize being allies for each other, right? And for the people we care about. So whether this wasn't something that you could take as a woman, but you know that your brother or your husband or your friend may have some prostate issues or may have anything else going on, and vice versa for the few men who may listen to this podcast, you know, learning these things that you're going to be able to support your sisters, your mothers, your wives, your daughters. I mean, this, it doesn't have to always be for you, but you could learn these things to be in support of the people that you love as well, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to kind of structure that. And the fact that, you know, shout out to all those people, by the way, who started listening. We saw a little bit of a spike in our listenership, which was really nice. We saw some reviews on Apple Podcasts. So you guys are listening to us. Thank you. It helps us to get our show out to more people. So we really appreciate that. So if you haven't gone and done a review, please do so. But the other thing, getting back to just this male, female kind of where the herbs fit and where they don't, you know, PCOS, like we mentioned, it's a big issue, not only because of, you know, the hormone levels and weight gain or whatever, but also infertility. And so, you know, this is one of those that helps with those elevated levels of prolactin, which contributes to infertility a lot of the time. And then, you know, some of those people that might have researched a little bit about salt palmetto and realized it lowers testosterone. I don't want to take it if I'm a man. Mm-hmm. No, it inhibits an aspect to convert testosterone into something else. And that androgen aspect of testosterone is the one that's going to cause male pattern baldness, a lot of those other aspects. So, you know, it's not just a one kind of ask. There's so many, when you're talking about hormones, it's so complex, so diverse. So, you know, as a man, you don't have to worry about your testosterone levels dropping and all these other things. If you start taking this, it's really something to just help support whole health.
Sweet. I love that. I love that. And yeah, so interesting how it just takes, you know, a certain part of this or affects in a certain way. And talking about the testosterone, I mean, even me, it's like, oh, you think about like sex drive or you think about those things, but I guess the way it's converted, it does have other effects. And it's not just related to those things. Like you talked about the male pattern baldness and just how this, this herb can support that,
right,
and not necessarily take away from the aspects of testosterone that men probably enjoy.
Right. And just talking about sex drive in general, it also supports nervous system. So if you have a low libido because you're stressed, which happens a lot with men and women, but men in particular, if you have a really high stress job, you come home and you're realizing, you know, year after year, as you start aging, that your sex drive is not what it used to be for a variety of different reasons. Salt palmetto could be the thing that helps support that. So on top of whatever else you might be using.
So there's just so much to this, to this herb. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's awesome. I wanted to kind of just segue into, I mentioned some tips about working out in the desert or, you know, just working out in a really warm or hot environment, whether it's hot and humid or hot and dry. And I actually got these tips from an article. It was written by Joe Decker, and he actually... The things that he has accomplished are literally mind-boggling to me. He has ran, it's called the Badwater Ultra Marathon, and it's a 135-mile run through Death Valley.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, that's literally what my reaction was when I read that and told Jeff. And then,
awful.
I know. And then there's another marathon that happens in the Sahara Desert, and it's over the course of 6 days, and it's a 152-mile endurance marathon.
Oh, my goodness.
So the man knows what he's talking about when he's talking about running and exercising in heat and having to support your body because, I mean, there are a lot of serious factors that could happen when you're exercising in heat if you don't support your body.
Right.
You know, one of the biggest focuses is staying hydrated and making sure you're maintaining your electrolytes. And obviously, this is clear to most people, when you sweat, you're losing water from inside the body, but you're also losing the electrolytes and the salt. By the way, if you hear a little bit of
crunching,
my cat's just eating breakfast right now.
I love how he does it though, because he like, he's in the wild really. He's sitting there and he takes a bite and then he looks around all spreading and then he goes back for another bite. It's the cutest thing.
Yeah, well, he's a pretty feral cat, so he's still on the alert. I feel. But yeah, back to it. You don't just lose water, but you lose the salt, you lose the electrolytes. And when those things happen, I mean, I remember one of my friends ran not even a marathon. I think it was like a 10K, but he wasn't properly hydrated and he went into kidney failure and it actually got really dangerous and really serious for a minute because, I mean, the extreme of these situations is death. Not to scare anyone, but especially if you're doing some massive, you know, marathons or just like working out in extreme heat for some reason, you do need to take those even extreme cases seriously. So it's a delicate balance between water and electrolytes. And if you don't drink enough water, you know, the thing that could happen, least that can happen, is you'll become lightheaded. I'm sure we've all experienced this at one point or another. Mm-hmm. Lightheaded, a little nauseous, but then again, that kidney failure could kick in, and then it could also, in extreme cases, lead to death. But then if you drink too much water without replenishing your electrolytes as well, you can experience something called hyponatremia, if I'm saying that correctly, and that could lead to some confusion or disorientation, nausea, muscle cramps, seizures, and also that extreme case of death. So, you know, it's not one without the other, and I guess that's why I graduated from the University of Florida. So the University of Florida are the ones that created Gatorade, and it's just, I don't drink Gatorade all the time or anything like that, but if I do know I'm going to be like in extreme heat, may not necessarily be Gatorade, but something that has a little bit more than just water. You know, you do want that a little bit of salt and that little bit of electrolytes in your beverages as well.
One of the things that we've mentioned on the show quite a few times, marshmallow root, mm-hmm. you should really have that anytime you're hiking, whether it's in the desert or not, but in particular areas where you're going to be sweating quite often, because if you do a cold infusion, you just put some marshmallow root into a tea bag, you put it into water when you start your hike, and it slowly infuses. It's because of the cold infusion of it, you're going to get more of that mucilaginous quality. It's going to be a little thicker. The viscosity is going to be a little bit thicker. And so when you're ready to drink, it's going to help you hydrate more. You're definitely going to be able to see that. And so that's a really great thing. Even if you do have Gatorade already, throw it in your Gatorade and cold infuse it.
Yeah. I mean, all of these herbs are about added support, right? Right. Like that's what it all comes down to. And some tips, they may seem obvious to some, but maybe not obvious to others, especially if you don't live in a warm environment. Maybe you're, again, this is our travel month. Maybe you're going for a specific event. Maybe you're going for vacation and you're just not used to being in that high heat. Your time of day is a huge thing to keep into consideration, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. being the hottest point. Personally, I find, you know, and most of you may experience as well, that coolness stays in the morning. Mm. You know, I've worked out at 6 p.m. and you still have that thick heat sometimes, especially when you get deeper into the summer. So if you have that opportunity, not only do you keep it in cool weather, but you get it out of the way. Loose, light clothing. I mean, this is something I always need to keep in mind, because I'm always so conscious of how much I sweat that I always wear really dark clothing because I don't want my sweat to show. It's the little bit of vanity in me. As I've gotten older, I've come to just whatever, sweat the way I sweat. But I, you know, without even thinking about it, almost all of my workout clothes are black, literally, or dark navy. So if I'm going to go into an extremely hot environment, that may be something that I need to purchase or just take into consideration, that I need it to be loose, maybe not something like tight leggings. And then I also need it to be light, because that light color, as you all know, is going to reflect the heat better than the absorbing factor of that those dark colors. Mm-hmm. And then the cotton can help evaporate that sweat. You also want to make sure you stay hydrated. And I know this may seem obvious, but really be mindful of your hydration if you know you are going to be in a very hot environment. So don't just wait until after your workout to drink a bunch of water. If you know you're going to work out, again, set yourself up for success. Support your body by making sure you get in some glasses of water before your workout. And then even while you're in the midst of it, take a sip of your water. Joe suggests maybe about every 15 minutes, even if you're not thirsty, because you're keeping yourself kind of at an equilibrium versus completely depleting. And then I don't know if you've ever had that feeling, Paula, it's really, really hot. You just get done with something, you chug so much water, and then you just want to vomit. So this will kind of like keep you at more of an even keel throughout the workout. And it's not saying every 15 minutes chug a huge bunch, but if you take those small sips, then you are not having to take as huge amounts as you would if you waited. And that kind of falls into the same idea of when we were talking about hiking and your rest time. Right. So it's all about staying mindful and thinking, okay, how can I keep myself going instead of going as hard and as long as I can and then not being able to continue.
Right.
And then, of course, drink afterwards as well. Check out the weather forecast. Again, this isn't even something, and I'm from Miami, so I am used to working out in not just high heat, but really, really high, thick humidity. So where it's so thick, it almost makes it a little bit hard to breathe sometimes in its own, like, in its own tropical way. But check out that weather forecast, because you could check out for heat advisories. If there's a really, really, if there's a heat advisory, then you may have high ozone and high air pollution levels. So those are things that you may not anticipate needing to be aware of, but they can affect the way you perform and the way you recover. The most obvious things, wear that dang sunscreen. I come from a sun-worshipping area of the world. I come from a mother who used to just sit in the sun with baby oil and that, like, reflective, I don't even know what those are called, like, reflective aluminum from, like, back in, is, like, Miami back in the day.
For real.
I kind of, you know, I never took it too seriously when I was younger, but now even if I'm working outside on my property, even if it's later in the afternoon, I put my sunscreen on. And also the most important thing that you could ever possibly do, especially when you're working out in an extreme, you know, more extreme environments, mm-hmm. especially maybe if you're pushing yourself in an environment that you're not used to, mm-hmm. is to listen to your body. And again, this may seem obvious, but as someone who watches people, even just in a regular workout class, mm-hmm. people don't actively listen to their body,
right.
because they think they need to push and push and push. But if you're starting to feel that dizziness, that nausea, it doesn't, that goal, you want to reach it in a healthy state. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, my friend, he finished that race and then he collapsed.
Right.
So think about the long-term effects of what you're doing if you're not listening to your body. That goes with injury. That goes with how you're feeling internally.
And one of the big things when we talk about heat and working out in the heat or hiking in the heat or whatever it might be, you really want to know the signs of heat stroke. You mm-hmm. can be a very active, healthy person and still suffer from heat stroke. You can be young. You can be old. So just think of the acronym FAST. So that's your face. If you have any kind of face drooping at all, arm weakness or arm tenderness, speech difficulties. And then if you've seen a lot of those, all three of those, it's time to call 911. It's time to get help. It's time to sit down, mm-hmm. rest, get out of the sun. So FAST, you know, definitely notice those stroke warning signs. Heat stroke is going to have a lot of the things that Danielle said with the dizziness and some of those other aspects as well. Just definitely do not push yourself. You know, there's no reward for being so tough you ended up in the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, that's just going to move you backwards.
Right.
So stay successful, friends.
Yes. So we're going to have Roxy on. She is an herbalist. She has this fantastic business. She does these what are called bougie tea parties, which I think are really neat and awesome. She sits down with women. They drink tea and they talk about herbs and different aspects of those. So she's going to be on. She struggled with PCOS, so it's all coming kind of full circle. We're going to be talking about herbs. We're going to be talking about PCOS. We're going to be talking about being vegan, going vegetarian, all of the different things within our diet that we don't necessarily think of, you know, and this is something that is really hard for a lot of people, because if you want to eat healthy now, you have to have money. You know, it's really unfortunate. Speaking of deserts, we have food deserts in America where people yes. cannot access high quality foods. They're living in places where they're around fields where they're constantly getting pesticides in their water and in their food and all of these things. And so it's really difficult to eat healthy, even if you are vegetarian or even if you're trying some of those things. So I'm really excited because all of those pesticides, all of those horrible things that contribute to hormone imbalances, PCOS, you know, all of that. We're going to dive into it with her. We're going to talk about her journey and, you know, also connect you with her. So that way, if you'd like to take some of her workshops, get more involved. I always love connecting with herbalists to kind of share the knowledge with everybody.
Yeah. So that's actually not it's for in a couple weeks. It'll be the second week of May. But we just wanted to tease you a little bit because we did talk about PCOS a little bit on today's episode and stuff like that. So just knowing that we're going to be providing a little bit more information on that, especially like we said, because there are a lot of women more than we even realize around us who are all who may be struggling with dealing with that.
Right.
So with that being said, I just wanted to say keep traveling. Travel makes you a better person. It opens you up to the world. Let it teach you things. Let it motivate you. Let it make you stronger. Try those herbs. Realize that when you eat that food, you are trying their herbs from that area. know that even when you're having fun, you could still be really supporting and moving and strengthening your body and just explore, because this world, it is far too beautiful and far too big to just stay in one place. But do it safely, friends. And with that, peace and love, and we'll see you next time.
And just as a reminder, any ideas or topics discussed during this podcast should not be a replacement for any type of medical advice. Although Danielle is a certified trainer and I have a knowledge of herbal medicine, any decision to incorporate an exercise or herbal remedy is always your own.